Move on.
Thank you for asking.
Kurt, you want to start?
Sure.
Well, I'm grateful. Jamie's here.
Thankful that we had the opportunity also to help her with her family and her trust. We welcome you here.
Thank you.
We think you know probably more about me than...
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I'm Travis Greenwood, and I'm actually with Larkin Mortuary.
Larkin.
So
been serving. Bob Larkin was one of my members years ago.
Yeah,
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 he was
CPA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm
welcome.
Thank you.
I'm Brandon Burningham. I actually work for SOAPS as well.
Oh, great.
Great location.
Oh,
well
represented.
It began with Memorial on the board.
Yes, mm-hmm. I switched.
Yeah, there you go.
Repentance.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure.
Okay.
We're
glad
to have it.
So, again, Tom Beard, and I own a preneed agency that does business in Utah and a few other states in the western part of the U.S. So I have a keen interest in the preneed part of what we do.
And actually, Tom's going to give us an overview of preneed. That is one of the areas that I think is probably the most complicated as far as the funeral licensing, the statute and the rule goes. So that will be helpful that this is the meeting you've joined us. Our other two members, one is another public member, his name is Toby Lee. And then we have Jeff Zeeley, and Jeff is a licensed funeral director, but also a professor at Salt Lake Community College in the mortuary science program. So we have a great representation. And actually, when I twisted Jeannie's arm, as she said, I told them what a great board we have. So it is. They are a great group, and I enjoy working with them. Boyce is our board secretary. And then Jenna Main is, she does some outreach and community outreach and other things, but her affiliation with this board is the exam, the PSI exam. So we'll have a discussion with her as well. That's something we're undertaking right now, is to update that exam. And Tom's been very instrumental and worked with Deborah on that. So hopefully we can resolve some issues with that. Corey is part of investigations. Each meeting we have an update from the probation officer, and then we have investigations come and give a report. So. And sometimes those people switch in and out because we have a lot of board meetings running at the same time. And so Bobby's actually an engineering board meeting, and Corey's been involved in some funeral investigations. So we asked him if he would kindly fill in.
Great.
That's the DACO representative.
Great. I'm impressed. Mm-hmm. This is a great level of support for DACO.
It is. It's well, we're pretty committed. Not every, about 60 professions are licensed at DAHL, mm-hmm. and not all of them have a board.
Right.
And those with a board, we really do try to stay pretty involved with. And it's difficult. In fact, last week I was in Reno for a CPA. I'm also old with the CPAs. That's why I stay. And I was there with my counterparts from other states, and they could not believe several of their boards are autonomous,
yeah.
So all they do is CPA licensing, and those executive directors do that all day long. Others have an umbrella agency like DAHL, but the other two people I talked to, one also did labor, and I don't remember what the other person did. So when I said, well, I do the funeral services, the building codes, the athlete agency just kept going on and on. They just
so like, what?
Yeah, we have to be jacks of all trades here, so, and masters of none, and athlete agents.
That's a thing.
Oh, that's a thing. You bet
that's a big thing. I didn't know
it's a big thing. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of them, and most of them are out of state, and most of them are attorneys, but they have to be.
We start calling.
Yeah. Licensed.
Okay, maybe not.
So.
Well, good. Thank you all. We appreciate it. Everyone's had an opportunity, I believe, to sign the per diem. And, Boyce, if you'll just follow up on that. None of us recall ever getting paid. I do recall getting a 1099 at the end of the year, or at the beginning of the year.
It
so
says
it says I got paid. I've seen that as I gave that to my CPA. So now, what is this 1099?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we will look into that.
All right. Do we need to read and approve minutes from last two times?
Right.
If you'll remember, in February, we didn't have a quorum.
Right, correct.
We couldn't approve the minutes from December.
So is that, do we need to turn the time to you, or do we simply need to ask for approval of
motion?
Okay. If I have a motion to approve those minutes, I trust you've all read them and thoroughly understand them and digested them well, Travis. So we have a motion to approve those minutes.
Mr. Chair, so moved.
Second.
Thank you very much. Motion's approved, and let's move forward then with... Oh, I forget that darn vote.
Yeah.
All those then who can approve minutes for 12-12-28 and February 20th at 19, please raise your hand. Is there anyone in opposition? We have four votes with the new member abstaining because she wasn't here.
So that was unanimous.
It was unanimous.
We're on the recorder, so they raised your hand, they didn't say it.
Voting was unanimous, thank you. Okay, let's turn to probation update then.
Okay, Corianne is not here because we do not have any active probationers. So I told her she was always welcome to attend the meeting, but again, Doppel has a lot of different responsibilities, and so she decided she would be
perfect. So let's turn to Corey then for an investigation update.
Yes.
So the first thing, I want to apologize for my dress. I wasn't made aware I was going to be here till this morning. So
you are dressed. You're fine.
Well, casual dress. Casual dress. I don't have a whole lot of information. A little update on Nyman Funeral Homes. I did a little research on that this morning. I don't see that there's any new charges that have come out of this so far. And it just appears that their case is just waiting to be adjudicated. So, and then as far as any new cases, I understand we have one new case out of Tooele. It's an active investigation, so I can't go into a lot of detail, but it does have to do with some advertising issues. So, and that's about all we have out of investigation right now.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Can you explain the process or order with regards to Nyman, what comes next? What when you say waiting for adjudication,
so
meaning that it has got to be...
Well, and even as a follow-up, adjudication of what? What are the charges?
He has been charged with communications fraud. He's also been charged with several counts of child sex abuse. And my understanding is, and I don't know exactly where he's in the process, I know he's been arraigned on the charges. After the arraignment, the next step in that court process would be a preliminary hearing where they determine whether or not there's sufficient evidence to move forward with the charges. I don't know if he's been through a preliminary hearing yet. Once that's done, they determine there's enough evidence to bind him over for trial. That's a trial date. And then that could get drug out literally for a year or better.
And trial will need to be completed and adjudication final prior to the board acting on any...
Okay, Doppel has already administratively acted on that, if you'll remember right. Mr. Nyman has a very limited license. He cannot practice as a funeral service director. The establishment is still open, but they have hired a new director. His father, I don't remember his name, Kent, voluntarily surrendered his pre-need license. There were two or three other pre-needs who we didn't want them to surrender their licenses because they're affiliated with far more than Nyman. But Nyman establishment itself cannot sell pre-need right now. So, and these guys have dropped up several times to make sure when we've heard there's a funeral up there or something going on that it is not Lonnie Nyman that is officiating, and it hasn't been. In fact, I'm not sure he's out of jail right now. I know he was arrested and then bailed, and then bail was posted fraudulently, and then he was
in
arrested
out,
again.
In out, so
yeah.
I don't know what his current status is. Last I knew, he was out of jail. So.
It's just hard to respond to the funeral homes that call and say, we can't believe this is still a going concern. It's like, well,
so the funeral service establishment is operating under a license of a funeral director that
other
is not Nyman.
Correct.
It is another party, and there's nothing to say legally that Nyman can't own
Correct.
The funeral service establishment. He just has to have a licensed director.
Correct.
So can I make sure I understand? So Nyman still has his funeral service establishment license. He just does no longer, or he is very limited on funeral service practitioner's license.
Yes, because the establishment license doesn't belong to Nyman. He was the registered agent. The license belongs to the establishment, so as long as there is a licensed agent affiliated with it.
So he was not a sole proprietor. He had set up an LLC or whatever, a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That is helpful.
I have a question. In a case like this, they can still continue to operate under the name of the funeral home, even though...
That's the funeral service establishment number, or the license.
Yeah.
So in this case, it's, I don't know what it's called, Cache Valley, what's it called up there?
No, it's Nyman Funeral Home.
Is it Nyman Funeral Home?
Yeah.
So they have the business, in essence, the business license, not the commercial license, but the establishment license, so that they can operate. They just need to have a licensed funeral director to run the business and operate.
To now, understand, the funeral home is not the alleged offender.
Right. That's
so
right.
They're not under... it'd be nice for us to be able to speak without, knowledgeably, without, I don't want to say incriminating the board, but saying, because when they call, you know, locked.
Uh-huh.
The funeral director's up there saying, what is going on? Why isn't something being done? And it's like, well, I can tell you, there's a lot being done. But there's an order to all things. It's just not doing what you want it to do. And that's for that.
Yeah, we'd like to just close them down, legally, we just can't close them down.
And sometimes that conversation just is a dead-end conversation from the very beginning, because they're not understanding processes of law. They don't even understand their own licenses. And how it functions. But when the tipping point of us being involved more fully is after criminal charges not only have been filed but adjudicated and sentence has been meted.
Then he could totally revoke his license if he's found guilty of these charges.
It would be nice to just walk them through the process so that we don't just say, I don't know.
Establishment could still remain open as long as.
Sure.
He may be in jail and out of the scene, but. It may still operate with a licensed director, but we could ask for the revocation of his license. Take action.
Question related to that. The communications fraud, is that related to the funeral business?
That is related to
posting the bell.
Yeah, I was going to say posting. I was trying to figure out how to word it correctly, but basically posting his bell.
Okay, but do you mean the Twilla establishment that's now under, or do you mean that?
My question is, where does the board come into this outside of the fact that he is unprofessional conduct, whatever terminology you use? This has nothing to do with something that he did in the funeral business, is that correct?
Well,
I thought you said communications fraud is what you're looking into with the Twilla establishment.
Lonnie's been charged with communications fraud, and that has to do with the original charge of the child sex abuse. He was booked in jail, and then he used fraudulent means to bail himself out. They tacked on additional charges.
Falls under moral turpitude.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely.
Unprofessional. What is your terminology?
Well, that's unprofessional conduct. But.
So a point of clarification relative to his limited license. He could still work a funeral service.
No.
He can't be at a funeral service?
Well, he can attend, but there better be a licensed funeral director there.
Okay, so that, I think, Kurt, is part of it. There may be funeral directors out there that see him on a service, but as long as there is a licensed director, whether or not it's the same one that has the name with the, it could be a second, could be anybody that's licensed, but he could be there pushing a casket, he could be there directing, just not in charge, if you will.
Correct, or officiating.
And my sense is that that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
If he's out of jail, I believe that's happening.
Okay, so we might want to pay another visit up there.
So we've been up, like Robin was saying, when we're aware of something, we've actually gone up and just sat, you know, back and just observed. And we have seen him there, but there's always been the other, and I forget his name, the other licensed funeral
director.
And you've also gone to the cemetery when they did the...
Yes.
And the same thing. Yes.
Yeah, we have not actually been inside the facility when they're having a service. We'll go out to the cemetery and see who's showing up there and whatnot. So,
but I think suffice it to say, he can act as an unlicensed person on a funeral, mm-hmm. but he can't be in charge acting under a license. Okay.
Well,
for the
contract for
signed
death
certificate. Yeah,
exactly. So I think any type of embalming or cremation or anything that requires a license. And if someone becomes aware of that, we will investigate it further, and he can be cited because we do have citation authority, so he can be fined. Okay. So.
And relative to the Tooele investigation, is that having to do more on the funeral side or the pre-need side?
I don't have a whole lot of information because it's not my case. I kind of got dropped on me today, but my understanding is it's on the funeral side.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
They are advertising they can make people alive again.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's how you false advertise it.
That is false
advertising.
Wow. No, I'm kidding.
She's joking.
Well, knowing some employers, you know.
I know.
You know what's going on.
That's right.
Something
shows up. Wow. Okay. Anything else for investigation? Sorry. Thanks, Corey. Appreciate it very much. Thanks for attending, and you're going to leave?
Yeah, I am. That's okay.
Thank you, Corey,
thank
you. Very much.
Thanks, Corey.
Thanks, Corey.
Okay. We've got several discussion items. Let's start with the instructor CEU.
Okay. We did talk about this briefly last meeting when we didn't have a quorum. So what I would like to do is, I know Boyce gave you all the rule, but I noticed he just gave you the current rule. I've got a working copy that I'm just going to distribute to each of you that are some changes that we talked about making, and I put the language in there, and if you'll take a look at that and make sure that it's what you want it to say, then if we could get some kind of a motion or something on record. Okay, so the instructor CEU would be on the third page. And I just added a new item E that says licensees who teach in continuing education courses meeting these requirements shall receive 2 hours of continuing education for each hour spent teaching. However, no teaching credit is available for participation in a panel discussion. And I borrowed this language from other similar professions that give credit to instruction. So
that's the only change.
That's the only change. That's the CEU change. When you get to pre-need and the contract, there's some additional ones in here. But that's the change.
Any discussion on the way it's written, the language?
I have a question. It says 2 hours of continuing education for each hour spent teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're teaching 15 hours a week, are you talking about semester credit hours teaching?
Well, funeral directors need 20 hours every 2 years.
Right.
So the philosophy behind the teaching is that there's preparation that goes into the teaching. If they teach 10 hours, then they would have their 20 hours continuing ed credit. If they're teaching a semester, they've more than met their continuing ed credit.
Okay.
So even though you make
this is in-classroom teaching hours?
Or teaching a continuing ed class. It's just any type of instruction.
Okay.
That meets, because this is in the continuing education.
And the instructor, by the way, has to be approved by has to go through a process to be approved by Doppel.
Doppel doesn't approve.
Is it not? Is it insurance?
Doppel does not approve them. As long
maybe it's insurance.
The insurance
department,
really
because
say,
I taught
yeah,
and I had to
yeah,
go.
Yeah. No, Doppel does
do
not
that.
Approve instructors.
That's
as long
right.
as the
that's
continuing
right.
education is right. is that's such right. that it's a valid continuing education course taught by someone who has the experience and knowledge to teach it. That's all that DAPL requires on continuing ed.
And that it's applicable to your license.
Yes. Yeah, to
and
your
then
license.
Is there not some type of a summary that you have to also
have you have to have a completion certificate, but only if you're audited or we are deemed to send those in. We did do an audit last year. I think somebody on the board received a notification. We just did a random audit. Mm-hmm. And if you were audited, you had to send in your completion certificate showing that you have the 20 hours. But if you're not audited, then it's just strictly a check the box the affidavit saying that you have done the continuing education and it meets the requirements. And the requirements are specified in the continuing education as what the class needs to meet as far as to count for continuing education.
Would this particular teacher also be responsible to provide those type of verified
certificates? Yes. Yeah. Any instructor should provide a completion certificate. The sponsor.
You're supposed to qualify the program. Make sure.
Sponsor shall issue a certificate of completion. It's B.
Yeah.
Let it be up above C.
So I guess one of the clarifications, because we had this issue with CPAs, you have somebody that puts together the material and you have somebody that is a teacher. We aren't necessarily the same. So the certificate of completion, is there a difference? I guess my question, is there a difference between a sponsor and a teacher?
There is.
Okay, and that's clarified in here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The sponsor would have to provide the certificate.
Any other questions on this language? Do we have a motion to adopt this language? You're motioning to approve the language. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Travis. Appreciate it. So, all those who, what's the language?
All those in favor of the motion,
please notify, say aye. Kurt?
Aye.
Jeannie's aye.
Aye.
Travis is aye.
Aye.
Brandon is aye, and Tom Beard is aye. So the motion is passed unanimously. If I can say it. Okay, thank you very much. Next item is funeral service interim license procedures.
Okay, so hang on to this. We'll talk about it further. The interim license procedures we also talked about in the February meeting. There was some question. We had a few come to the board asking for extended interim licenses. Most of the time, those interim licenses extended. What the statute actually says is the license is issued for 2 years. It can be extended once for 2 years. So you can have an interim license for 4 years. That is in statute, so it is not up to the board, or we can't make a rule change that trumps the statute that provides for anything more than that. The only thing that would be appropriate is if someone had an intern's license and then they did the additional 2 years, so now they've had an intern's license for 4 years, and they are still actively pursuing their director's license, they would not be able to do anything as far as they wouldn't be licensed, so they couldn't participate, but they would already have earned their experience. They could still pursue becoming a director by studying for the exam and taking the exam, but they could not participate as under a licensed director as an intern. However, if you wait 2 years and apply again, it's considered a new license. So if you really needed additional time and had not progressed to the point of becoming a director and wanted to be more involved by any folks to do involvements and other things, if you were still pursuing it after 2 years, you could apply for a new intern license. So, but there would have to be that 2 year period in between, or it would be a reinstatement or in the statute doesn't allow for that. So that's pretty much this point. Without a statutory or a legislative change, all that could be considered.
Any comment or suggestions? I can't imagine somebody working in the business 4 years, not being able to get it, and waiting 2 years working as a non-licensed. I don't know how an establishment could do that very easily. There may be a few that could, but let them come back 2 years later. You
find it's a secure
change. Yeah. Yeah. Or even it's 2 years to come back as a new licensee or new applicant.
We have one.
I was going to say, I'm aware
of one. Started, went to another job, now he's come back, and now he's doing it again.
Applying as a fresh new licensee.
Yeah, but then. His second career,
oh, yeah.
Which is military, retired and come back, and now he wants to the LDS Church. Interesting how he wants to do funeral service and issues like that.
Okay, so as so going forward, Robin, on this, so when we talk about interns and their request for, essentially, we can give an extension, but it cannot be longer than 4 years total.
Right.
So that's our limitation.
Mm-hmm. To renew at once. Because when it expires, they will come to the board for renewal.
For renewal.
So
right.
You can consider mm-hmm. renewal.
So we can extend at once.
Yeah,
we don't have any power to extend it beyond that.
No.
Makes good sense to me.
So, and that doesn't inhibit them from becoming a director.
Right.
They can still pursue it, but they can't act. They can't gain any more experience. I have a licensee call who said, I didn't really get licensed as an intern until this year, but man, I did a lot of great embalmings last year. Can I use that experience? I don't even want to hear this because that is unlawful experience, and no, you can't count it toward your... Then she got really nervous. She said, I don't know, I'm worried I'm going to... Okay, just
come on down. I
do 2 years.
Yeah, let's go.
So,
boy. Okay.
And it's like Kurt says, a lot of people really don't understand their license or the scope of their authority, and it can be confusing. It really can be, but.
It was evidence of that was at the Utah Funeral Directors meeting down in St. George, where we did a little training on the preneed part of DOPL, and there were a lot of questions. Everyone had to respond via their phone, and there were several questions where 30% got it right. It was telling.
Yeah.
It was very telling.
Well, and I think you'll find that across all professions.
I'm sure.
I think that's true. I had somebody call me one day and ask me if there was a manual. They'd gotten the school district audit and they wanted to figure out what they needed to do. I was like, well, first thing we need to do is send that right back, say you not qualified.
Okay. Jen, let's turn to you for the PSI exams update.
Sure. Okay. First off, we are in the middle of our exam review committee. We're rewriting, or not rewriting, but they're reviewing the exam currently. We have our subject matter experts. We were able to find six of them. We've combined both tests, the pre-need and the funeral services director, in the respect that they're doing the review for both exams at the same time. They had their preliminary meeting on the 26th of April to kind of discuss how it worked, and they will be having their update on the exam at the end of the month. It usually takes 2 to 3 months to publish once they get that done. But on that note, I wanted to pass this out and let you guys look at it for a second. This is a page out of the candidates information bulletin. The section I want to look at specifically is the contact outline. There's been several discussions or complaints that we are too heavily weighted in pre-need on the funeral services director. So I have another project that we're working on for the contractors for the Utah Business and Law, and in the process of that, something came up that posed a question about how we have 30 questions that are Utah-based on that exam and 142 that are kind of, they quote, nationally. And I asked them, well, how do we determine, how does it determine how much of each question goes on to the exam, you know, being that there's 30 Utah and 142 national. I said, is it random, you know, so many, or is it so many of Utah and so many of the national, how do we make that decision? And it turned out, this is what shocked me, it's completely random, not just between Utah and national, but all overall. It could be all national. So I said, well, what would I have to do if I wanted, in this particular exam, I want to make it heavily ethically related because of all the state changes. How do I ensure that ethics portion is on the exam? And it turns out at the top, there's that little piece of paper. It says content outline in the top left corner. That's how this is set up. So if I want to heavily weight a particular item, I have to add it to the content outline to make sure, like, for instance, on that one, it says tackle flaw. There's my question.
This is the contractor one.
Yeah, this is the contractor one. So I want to add ethics to it, so I will add that as a content outline item and how many questions I want on the exam. That way when it randomly, the computer randomly pulls every exam, so it's different every time. So if we had it heavy on pre-need and the content outline doesn't specify how many pre-needs. If you look on ours, on the full page, our content outline is only split into two sections. It's split into the three items on the Utah Code and then 22 items in number two. The test will be split based on that. So it doesn't know that we want to have only two questions on a 25-question exam for pre-need. It just knows that we have 22 items that fall, and it'll just randomly pick it. So if we want to change that, because it's completely random in the system, then we have to weight those questions, kind of like the content outline at the top corner. The problem is, not to put any pressure, but we're right in the middle of the review. So I only have till the end of the month to hand this back to them so they can set up a content outline so that when they're pulling questions off and putting questions on, they know what the weight is, you know, how much per test exam. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Jen, can I ask you this content outline?
Yes.
So these subject areas total 60%, so the other 40% comes from?
Okay. So that's something I have to fix on that because I checked it myself and it's actually number of questions. I don't know why they have a percentage sign on there, but it's the actual number of questions.
And again, to be clear, this little content outline is not relative
it's
to our test.
Right. No, it's kind of what I would like us to do.
Yeah,
it's what I would like us to do so I can take it back to PSI and say, I've talked to the board, this is how they want to weight the exam. And then when they meet with their subject matter experts, they can rearrange the test to meet our accommodations.
So what would you like us to do to develop, in essence, this content outline for the intern test and the pre-need test?
So we have 20, I have it for both of them. I attached both of them. I have on the pre-need is the one, funeral service is the one I think I have on your guys' top. There's 25 questions.
Okay.
I want us to put the number of questions based on the content outline that you've already established below. So, for instance, division of responsibilities, I would like one question there, one question of penalties, one question, that's obvious, that one's easy. But the next one, we have 22 questions and I don't know how many categories we have on there because I don't have my glasses to know. But so anyway, where do we want the weights to be? The other question that I would ask is if you guys are happy with the 25 questions, because if you're not, this is the place to change it.
So it can be more questions?
It can be whatever you want. There's nothing on statute that says the number of the questions. So,
how long does it take, or how long are they allowed?
On this one, 45 minutes.
Wow.
They have to get a passing score of 75%. And actually, it's on, both tests are the same.
How long has it been since the time and the question content has been changed?
We're on a two-year rotation. I haven't been here for very long, so
I guess what I'm really asking is thinking in terms of when the exam was originally put together, what were the conditions of the industry at that time, and have things gotten sufficiently complicated in the meantime that it really needs to be a longer exam?
One thing that has changed in the last year, the pre-need and the funeral director license was, or test was the same.
Uh-huh.
That has been split in the last year because that did not make any sense at all. So those are individual tests. As far as the number of questions and the timeline, that, as far as I know, has not been altered in a long time.
So may I make a suggestion? Why don't each of us, if you need this to now, it's what you're asking.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Why don't we take a look at, so on that, there's three items, it says, but those are questions. So there's one question for each of those three areas. It's what you're saying, Jenna.
Right.
And then we need to come up with how many questions for each of those categories A through O. Why don't you take a minute and based on your ideas, how many questions put that next to the letter, for example, A definitions, how many questions do you think ought to be done? And let's run down that. I've just
and
done
this
that.
And this is the director, the funeral service director, the top one.
Right.
And you can even strike and get a question, right? I mean, if
yeah,
say,
you can.
Hey, we don't want any questions on excess proceeds
yeah, you
or
can
whatever.
Strike it and you change the way of the rest of the questions, whatever you want.
Let me ask 25.
So a total of 22.
Yeah.
So your number
should
go
from 25.
Well, I don't think so.
Well, that takes you a pretty slim margin of one in
yeah.
categories and two. You missed a couple?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it goes back to what my director came back and said. I take the test and they ask me what size font needs to be on the contract.
I agree.
So he misses that, which has zero to do with funeral service directing.
So fundamentally, here's a question. How much
but if
do you
he had
want?
50 questions, it wouldn't matter.
Right.
But it only had 25,
okay.
So it was very heavy to miss just one.
He only missed six.
Yeah.
Well, he missed more than but the ones that he missed were like, how would I know the size of the font?
So at whatever level you're right, I mean, that's a great question.
But if
you
had
50, even
it probably would have been a moot point.
Yeah, that's true.
But it is in the rule, and it is an open book.
But it was more on the preemie side, and we've divided that,
yes.
So I'm talking really about a moot point.
Well,
but it's
no, because there's still potential for preemie on here.
Yeah.
If you look at that
list,
like
yeah.
excess proceeds
right.
is a preemie issue.
Preemie arrangement
is a preemie, yeah.
Yeah, but you're not going to talk about contract font size in those questions now, are you? And haven't they been moved under the prearrangements?
No. This is still language
yeah.
that both tests have to study for.
Both tests. There are like a whole bunch of questions, and then it randomly selects
right.
what questions
okay.
go over.
But the preemie side hasn't been constrained to the preemie side.
It has.
And the funeral director side falls to the funeral director
yeah.
side because the preemie contract font size has nothing to do with funeral service. Director's license.
No, I disagree. Here, let me say, the funeral service director license, I think, has the funeral service side, but I think you also want your interns and directors to have some knowledge, not as much, but some limited knowledge of preneed.
Oh, I agree.
So that because they're going to right, so they're going to they have to have some knowledge. Therefore, they got to be tested on it. But for example, on excess proceeds,
no,
I would want them to know how excess proceeds are handled, where a preemie person needs to know it. But the excess proceeds are going to be handled by the director, not the preemie person.
And maybe
right?
I'm trying to build in a little fail-safe for them mm-hmm. in the sense that a question like font size comes up and it would be like, where and why do I need to know that?
So
I can miss that,
yeah.
but that doesn't fail me out of
yes.
the test because I can only miss six.
Or they can find it in the rule and answer the question. If they study the rule, they don't even memorize it. They just need to say, okay, this is where I find
that's
preemie.
That's the problem
in
not looking at preemie as an intern or a funeral director. They should.
But,
yeah,
but if they go to the stage to take the test, it will tell them, this is what could be on the test.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here's
yes.
an example of what you should study, and you need to look at the rules, and you need to look at the statute, and be familiar with it. You don't need to memorize, but you need to be able to say, oh, it's a preemie question. Let me go to this section.
Right.
So they just have to spend a little time.
And their open book test for
yeah,
their binder materials
all
needs
of them,
to be able
intern,
to be referenced directly.
And preemie are all open books.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They are.
The intern
yes.
and the director take the same test.
And this only applies to Utah law rules, correct?
For license?
Yes.
Yeah.
applies to
don't the
both.
Intern and the director take the same test? I know
the intern and the director
take the same test.
For the Utah one.
Yeah, for the Utah law. And then the preemie take the separate test.
Right. So I think we could still start with the same process.
Yeah.
Go down and list the number of questions. If we want to add, if we want to expand the test to 50, then maybe we look to double or modify it from there. But why don't we get a list real
quick? The other thing that you can do is if you're looking at that content list and you see, like for instance, you know, right off the bat, I can see that there's two pre-need items. I don't know that much about the profession, but I can see there's two pre-need. We can narrow it down to, because if you look at the contractor one, do they have like 10 categories, 12 categories? I mean, you can narrow the categories down to pre-need. Of course, you take out the, you know, if you have specific questions you want to ask, but you can have pre-need. Both of those questions put, or those categories put down to just pre-need.
Okay. So, can we take a minute and do that? Let's go through the 22 then and determine how many questions you would like. For example, on my list I put, I want two questions on definitions.
I did
too. And then just keep going down. I don't want to.
Were you thinking of asking one question for each one of these letters? I mean,
what represents the number of questions representing that category.
Yeah, but okay.
At the time.
Yeah, makes sense. So the total number that you're going to write in has to equal 22 at this point.
The other thing is, like up in that top section, I mean, it has three items. If you want that heavier weighted too, you know, you want more questions in that area, those areas, we can change the number too. Okay.
Thank you. And there may be some topics that you don't even feel like you need a question. So just leave it as a zero or blank, if that's the case.
Some of these pre-needs, you know, and go heavier on intern supervision and activity requiring a license. You can't believe how many directors don't know they have to be licensed to do an embalming.
Or a cremation.
Or a cremation, especially a cremation.
I think cremation we have more than ever.
I agree.
Because that's
whatever you are having issues with,
that's what
should
you
be expanded fairly significantly, in my view.
Cremation.
And unprofessional content. What is
Exactly.
Exactly.
Jenna, do they automatically extend the time out for the amount of questions there are?
Well, it's not automatically, but they will. They have
if
a. Whatever we tell them to, we overtest. So. Yeah.
Which may affect their scheduling and all that. We make this a 90-minute test. That may affect their scheduling abilities. We have to look at that.
They take this one time, or they take
just
it
once.
Just once. Mm-hmm. That, in my view as a public member, I want to make sure that they, at the get-go, understood what they needed to do.
Yeah.
Because if they're not reviewing this in the meantime, it's easy to forget.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. And they have their national board exams, and then this is the Utah Law and Rules.
Okay, are we
from
both?
From my experience, the Utah Law and Rules exam, ethical behavior, those
and
kinds of things
conduct,
are the things that impact the industry, could you call yourself an industry?
Profession.
Okay. Impact the profession, the reputation, the concerns people have. That's my decision.
So let's just start down the list and very quickly let's go through and say what your number is. Let's come to a consensus and we can add it up. Fair enough.
Just for the 22?
Yes.
The number.
Well, let's start with the 22 and we can and modify from there. So the definitions?
I got three.
Three? Kurt?
Two.
I've got two. Can you live with two
I
for now?
Two.
Let's live with two for now and then we'll come back and modify. It'll probably go to three or maybe even four. Who knows? If we go to 50. Intern supervision?
Two.
quickly just, let's just kind of circle around.
One.
I'm in agreement. Let's leave it. Activity requiring license?
Three.
I have one.
One.
I had one. You're suggesting let's do, okay, let's go to two. Okay. FTC rules and merchandise?
Two.
I said one, so I'll go to two. Beneficiary?
One.
Got it. Audit guarantee?
One.
Zero. Do we really need that?
I'm not even sure what
that is. If we're adding two to
that's why they said zero.
If you're going to be audited, you need to understand that either is an. Okay. Are you auditing? Have you ever audited an intern?
Let's go one.
Are you?
We'll come back.
Audited an intern?
Have you ever audited an intern?
No. The only
see the number of embalmings or actually workplace participation?
Just generally when they apply for a director to make sure that they have actually done it, or if an investigator drops by and wants to look at records and wants to know if the intern is.
Okay. Record maintenance?
One.
Okay. Director license qualification?
Two.
And one.
I had one. Stay, Kurt, you okay to stay at one for now?
Yeah.
Training arrangement and fund liquidation?
One.
Two. One it is. Contract filed with Utah Insurance?
Zero.
I thought we had to go.
I think in an expanded we'll go with one. I had zero as well. But in an expansion, maybe we go one.
Because that's the owner's responsibility. It's not the licensed funeral director.
But this is a funeral director who will turn into an owner.
If he doesn't know it, then he needs to box less clothes halfway. Strike that. You don't even know that as an owner, and then you shouldn't have to take a test.
Okay, contents of file.
One.
I can live with one. Licensure?
Not knowing what that means, I would say two.
I put one.
Because if that's what is qualifying you to get your funeral director's license.
But there's a director license qualification above that, so I'm not sure. Licensure just must be more general.
Then if they're one of the same, then I would say zero. Because I put two above on the other one above.
I guess that's a question I have. Is licensure covered in your three questions above?
Yeah.
Or is there, what's the nuance there? And does there need to be no license?
Because number C, activity requiring license.
Yeah.
And as well as age, director.
Yeah, I see it on there three times.
Yeah, so why don't we strike L?
So
okay,
strike
L. Excess proceeds?
One.
Four.
I mean, that's why I said one.
You put four on the next one.
So let's say, what did we say, two or one?
You're the only one who didn't say one.
I just know I thought about how many funeral directors don't know it. Unprofessional conduct?
Two.
Okay, I got it. And cremation?
Three.
Four. I said five. I'm serious.
Really?
I just think there's so little knowledge out there. But let's go with three for now. That's kind of a compromise of all of it. So if we say one, two, three. I'm coming up with 18. Are we off? Two definitions.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20.
18, 19, 20. Okay.
And we need 22, so you could.
So we could add to it. Let's go back and expand it quickly to what, 47 questions? If we take the test to the 40, or do you want to double?
Why don't you add a couple?
So add, go 2,
and
then, 2?
Yeah.
Well, your percentages are going to be the same, though. Do you want them the same? Do you? Okay. Just double it then. So are you writing these down, or?
Well, it wasn't until we all got different numbers.
Let's review the numbers. Let's go through the
okay.
top. We'll come up with four more. So the top three, we're going to go 2, 2, and 2.
Okay.
The next one, we're going to go to 4. Definitions is 4.
Okay.
Interim supervision, 2.
We have already.
I was in the category.
Letter C, activity requiring license goes to 4. FTC rules goes to 4. That seems heavy to me, no?
No, it's beneficiary. FTC rules under review this year, and it's going to be significant.
Okay. Beneficiary is 2. Audit committee is 2. Record maintenance, 2. Director license, 2. Training arrangement is 4. I mean, 2. You know what?
Which one?
2. Preemie arrangement and fund liquidation is 2.
Contract. Isn't that kind of the same as M?
No, it's not.
It's fund liquidation.
Preemie arrangement, it's a different animal.
Got it.
Yeah, it is. Contract filed with Utah Insurance is 2. Contents of file is 2. L is scratched. Excess proceeds is 2. Unprofessional is 2. Cremation
four.
Is
4.
Excuse me, 4, my bad. And cremation is 6. Now we need 2 more questions. So let's go back. Excess proceeds.
Yeah, because you got 46. So if you just wait some 46 questions.
So we need 4 more.
So you need
to
4
Brandon's
more.
Point. So how about if we go 1 more cremation, 1 more unprofessional conduct.
So 5 and 7.
And I'd still go excess proceeds just because it was a deal. So understood. Misunderstood. You okay with that? Mm-hmm. Travis?
Does that add up?
That should add
you
up.
You need 1 more.
1 more.
That is great.
Okay. Definitions.
Definition, Jeff. That's a good one.
So 5 definitions.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, do we need to do the same thing now for the preemie test?
If you would like to change the weight, yes. We'll have to do the same
thing. I think we want to add weight and number of questions, same as you as
okay. Free. So how many questions did we total out?
50
questions. Yep. All right.
And I've got them. We'll want to add minutes.
Well, we don't have to change the time. I think they have like a algorithm that does that automatically.
Yeah, as long as they're not trying to do 50 questions in 45 minutes, we're okay. Okay. So let's do the same thing. I would go 2, 4, 6.
Can I ask you one quick question before I move on?
Sure.
On the funeral services director, do you want to combine anything that's pre-need all into one category, or do you want it specifically drawn out like that?
Okay. Fine, we are.
Okay.
Can I go back, directors? Are we making the assumption under fellow cremation is also including alkaline hydrolysis?
Yeah, I was going to ask the same thing earlier. Thank you. I think we need to add at least 2 questions to alkaline hydrolysis. Because it's here.
Okay. So should we do 5 cremation and 2 alkaline?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that works. Yeah, it's here. We got to have it.
It's in the
rules. Okay.
So 2.
Yeah, I don't know if you know, the only licensed alkaline hydrolysis facility at this point is called Aquamation.
Really?
That's how they grant it. Aquamation, not alkaline hydrolysis.
Mm-hmm. But the statute calls it alkaline hydrolysis.
It does. Yeah.
Okay. And our Allison McCoy is now a licensed funeral service director.
Isn't that amazing?
She went through that internship program just as quickly as she possibly could, and she just got a license. Yeah. Passed it. Well, no. She hasn't applied. She just passed the exam. So she'll be.
Okay, I think if you can kind of look at the previous thing, I think where we wanted to go here is let's focus significantly more on preening, less on the funeral service side. So definitions, we probably stay at 4, 5,
or 5.
Okay,
we move them to 50
to preening. Yes. So 5 questions on definitions. Funeral merchandise, what do we have? 2.
So we don't have to give them merchandise on that one.
We don't. So I would say.
No, the preemie thing.
Yes.
Right, but it's not on.
You're right. It's not on the director.
FTC rules and merchandise.
Yeah.
That's a really good question.
Gone for 60.
That was one of the reasons why I asked if we'd separated these, because some of these categories seem There, some on the funeral side should be on the preneed side. Some on the preneed side should be on the funeral side.
Yeah, I would go back. I don't know if it was me. I would think you'd want to add something to the director for funeral merchandise, William.
Well, what do you want to do?
You have that option.
We can delete. Well, we deleted the one. We could insert it where in L and put funeral merchandise.
Well, we don't have any weight to that, so we have to.
Right.
Brad made a point. It's listed here as FTC rules and merchandise on the directory.
You're right.
So yeah, that's
there.
Question. We're good.
Good job.
So why did they separate on the second one?
I don't know.
Just because they are? Yeah, do they need to be funeral merchandise FTC rules?
That means in your question database, you have to have separate questions for one exam.
Yeah, if they're separated, that's the way that they'll be separated on the exam.
Yeah.
So funeral merchandise, I'd probably, let's round robin. What would you do? That's how many? How many questions?
Well, two for that and two for FTC rules if they're separate.
It says four and
four. Four and four.
On preneed, you want four and four?
You say two.
On FTC, I'd say two, personally. Travis?
FTC scares me if they're not versed in that.
They're going to get
it. But this is for preneed?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
Four and four is fine. Four and four. Somebody keep a running.
Yeah, that's.
Running
full.
I got it.
You got it. Thank you. Beneficiary is two, consistent with the other. Audit and guarantee. We don't get audited. The establishment can be audited, but I don't.
But the
preneed does not.
Set now.
Really?
No,
well,
audit
not
provision.
Not the.
And our continuing continuing education is through the Department of Insurance,
yeah.
Not
okay.
Through DOM.
All right. Okay.
So what is the word guarantee there for? They're talking about the type of contracts.
The type of guaranteed contract should be in there. If we could scratch audit, because I don't think that's accurate.
Okay.
And leave guarantee with two questions.
Is it guaranteed contracts?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Record maintenance would be two. Licensure would be, what do we say? Licensure is kind of, I'd say four, depending on whatever overlap there is. Preneed arrangement.
That means.
I don't know, but let's go four. We can look. Contract filed with Utah Insurance. Again, that's. It's more a macro issue than it is a micro. It's a
one.
Max, yeah, I'd go one. Contents of file, I'd go two. Preneed provider. If anyone has a different opinion, please. Unprofessional contact, I'd go four.
Conduct.
At least conduct, sorry. Association with funeral director, that is critical and doesn't happen at least a four. Yeah. Excess proceeds.
Because it would also deal with the unassociation, too. Right?
Exactly. Could be two or three really good questions there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Excess proceeds, where are we total-wise?
9, 15, 19, 27, 30, 36, 40.
Okay, let's go, let's jump, excess proceeds, let's go two, revocation fee, I don't even know, I'd say scratch it, and deposit time limits go two.
So we're still
at 40, that brings us 44 if you're,
six
what you said is accurate. Let's double check it. Plus.
Well, I've got 50.
Am I adding on? 50 total with these up
here.
Yeah. We're considering 44 down here.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got a total.
Yeah, the ones up above.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
I didn't count the ones up above.
We're good.
So I think we're good.
So what we're doing on the top three? I didn't hear that.
Two for each, so six for fellows and men. And I've got. In fact, do you want mine?
Yeah.
Good work, team. That's excellent. That's great.
Then we'll have Helena give us an update at the next meeting and let us know how that went.
So, Ken, is it possible for you to tell us, announce who the folks are on this, who the subject matter experts are? Do you know those names by chance?
I know one of them for sure. Tessie's my nephew. I would have put that. We melted it right here, and I was hoping I'd got that in. Give me a second, real quick. Yeah, I don't have it here. You know what? I can go print it off and just bring it up and leave it with you. I just remember that there was, I know there was a professor.
How many preemie, how many directors?
There was 4 prenatal director, 2 preemied, I think.
If I understand you right, this has to be done by the end of the month, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So subject matter experts now have double, basically, what they thought they were having to deal with questions. Do you need more help?
No, because actually 6 is perfect. I'm happy with 6.
And the database, the questions already exist. The question is referring to the database. So it's not a matter of coming up with
syrup. It may come up at this point is because we doubled the test. That was not a question I came into the meeting expecting to answer. So I have to look and see what the bank is. I may send you guys an email and say, hey, send me a couple questions. But I have, like I said, I have to look at the bank. I'm sure they will.
Do we run a problem or a foul with the testing center timeline, being able to schedule?
That was my question. If that slows down scheduling, that's going to be a problem.
Nope. Like I said, it takes 2 to 3 months to publish the exam. They'll have time to work out all those issues with scheduling. Okay. So, and like I said,
there are not that many people taking the exam at a time. We did not get very many applications for either. That I can't imagine that it's a huge scheduling issue.
And like I said, we own the test. I mean, they'll accommodate whatever it is the board wants to do. I've done some crazy things lately.
So I have another question related to fees for your exam. Since you're doubling that, will that impact the fee?
No. The fees for the exams are across the board the same price. Actually, that's slightly off, but it is almost completely across the board.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
I will print that off and just drop it off in a minute.
Thank you. That'd be helpful. Okay, let's turn to item number 4, guaranteed products.
Okay, so in the meeting in February, we talked about this, and Tom suggested this would be on about page, follow along, section 610, it's about 6 pages back. Tom suggested striking the entire section. Felt like it was unnecessary. So my proposed rule shows it stricken. It's in the working copy that I.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
It's about 6 pages in.
Okay.
Section 610. So
is there, as we review this, is there any concern with striking this? The background issue is this, that cash advance items, it's very unclear as to what the cash advance item part of it is. And as we go to the public, kind of goes back to some of the conversation on printing. Generally speaking, when a consumer buys an advanced funeral plan or prearranged contract, when they buy it, they generally go back to their family members and say, hey, we've just done this, it's taken care of, you're not going to need to do anything at the time, or it's going to be less for you to do, less decisions and so forth. And children say, great, thank you, that's wonderful. Hopefully they say that. The problem is that there are really four or five parts to a funeral plan. There's the professional fee for the funeral home that constitutes the services that they're going to provide, whether it's embalming, meeting with the family, et cetera, et cetera. There's merchandise, including the casket or the container for a cremation. There's the vault or the urn for the body or the ashes. And the fourth part of the funeral plan is what we call cash advance items, which are costs outside, typically outside of the funeral home, like obituary, flowers, death certificate costs, et cetera.
Programs.
Yeah, a bunch of different things. The fifth part of a plan may be the cemetery items. Most people have cemetery taken care of before they buy an advanced plan, or if they're at a combo like at Larkin, they may do it all together, okay? So the cash advance items, the concern is that if the language is, and I've been talked to by several people in the profession, that paragraph is very confusing. It says that is defined and unless you can't, is prohibited in a pre-need funeral arrangement unless the item is a guaranteed product, permitting the contract to meet the requirements of essentially a guaranteed product. So it's very confusing, and yet consumers want to be able to pay for those items ahead so that it's a complete plan. So that's why I recommended striking this. It allows us, if you go back in prior notes or a prior statute, there is a provision to do it, and it's just confusing. So that particular paragraph kind of confused a lot of people, and some people, therefore, some funeral homes and establishments don't allow their preneed people to do those cash items because of that paragraph, which is a disservice to the consumer.
We put it in supplemental cash. They're able to
prearrange
supplemental cash for those items, and those can be listed as examples of what that could cover.
That's right.
But not
a lot of times, if you say their allowances or their estimates, they're not a guaranteed item. They're not a finite amount. We put an allowance amount in.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's not going to be able to guarantee that.
No. And the way that we say that often is, these are costs outside of the funeral home, so the funeral home can't guarantee those costs. They have no control over those things. So that's the background. Does anyone have an issue striking that paragraph or a concern of any kind?
Well, because I believe what was done originally is they gleaned the definition from the Federal Trade Commission, and it says they're the FTC rule, which now that has changed too.
Yeah.
So we really aren't in compliance federally either with what that paragraph says we can and can't do from a pre-planning standpoint.
So do we have a motion to strike this paragraph?
This section.
From this section, from the statute.
From the rule.
From the rule.
So by
I propose that we strike and remove Rule 156-9-610 in its entirety. From.
Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Travis. Appreciate that. All right, all of you who approve this motion, please say aye or nay to oppose. Kurt?
Aye.
Aye.
Jeannie?
Aye.
Oh.
That's okay. Just keep right hanging up.
I said aye.
I'm going to catch up with
the motion passed unanimously. Robin, thank you for your work on that. That's great. That will help clarify a lot of things for a lot of people. When will that go into effect?
Okay. The rule process. And this will be a long time before it's in effect. Once you give me some final language, because these are the only changes that you're suggesting in the rule, then I will prepare the rule filing, including a financial analysis of everyone and their dogs that may or may not be affected by these changes financially, including government, large business, small business. It's quite a form and quite a process. So once that is done and it's signed off on by me and then the director and then the executive director and then the administrative law judge, then it will be filed with administrative rules up on the hill. Then it will be published for 30 days, at which point we'll have a hearing, maybe in conjunction with our next board meeting, where people can either yay or nay, or if I've received any comments or you receive any comments, they have to be considered. Then about 2 weeks after that, it would be in effect. So my guess is probably a couple months, 3 months. No, I think it'll be sooner than that, but it might be September-ish. Or
that's great news. Okay. That's great news.
That's it.
A lot of people appreciate that change because it's been confusing.
Are there any questions in your database related to that that ought to be taken out as it's being? I don't know if there are. I'm just asking the question.
No, there aren't.
Okay, great.
I'm almost certain there aren't. About 100% right. Okay, let's turn then to contract forms, which is R156-9607.
And on this one, this is one that we've had some discussions over. I haven't made any changes. I'm happy to consider whatever the board wants. This is the font size one, Kurt, that you talked about.
And Robin, this is still very confusing, based on especially the test questions that are still being answered. I hear this all the time. Is it an easy to read? Because one of the answers on the test is something similar to easy to read.
Mm-hmm.
In my judgment, this ought to be changed to say a type size no smaller than 12 point or 14 of New Times, or list a couple of font sizes. I agree that you get a 14 point in a script may actually look like an 8 point. A 14 point in an Arial or a New Times Roman is probably, the whole purpose of this is what? It's to protect the consumer to be able to read the contract. And we're talking about older people reading those contracts. So, I mean, what that says, six lines per vertical inch, no more than six lines vertically, and no more than 15 characters per horizontal inch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a journalism guy. I'm used to a pica stick.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you exactly what that is. I can't tell you. So, I would suggest that we change it to a font size.
Doppel, what would you say that is?
About an inch and a half by, no.
They would say easy to read is defined to be
unreadable. We don't interpret it, we would read it.
That's right. That's what they do.
And we do have a division model on file if anybody asks, but we've really been given the direction by our AG rep that we are not in the contract business and we should not be giving them any direction what it should look like. So, really the only requirement is it needs to be easy to read. If we want to further define that, or if...
Easy to read.
You're going to have 100 people ask you the question, what is easy to read?
Yeah, I just don't think
well, this is the current language. This is what's been in here for a million years.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the history was with how that came about with easy to read.
So would the AG or whoever's going to review this have a heart attack if you said this font or 12-point font?
Million years.
Where'd that come from, Kurt?
This came from Baseball. Forethought.
I'm going to shoot.
Came from Kurt. So in the early...
strike that voice.
Yes.
Edit that piece.
In the early 90s, when Forethought came to Utah changed their contract laws and developed these rules. His first name, who was the director of the department at the time, came out with a model contract. And I don't know if it's the same one. Is it about six pages long?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Batesville, Forethought Insurance, took the law, went in and made a one-page contract. He got so angry.
My predecessor?
Yes.
Yes.
He got so angry.
He was the bureau manager. He looked at the director.
Okay.
Yeah, Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know Dan well.
He was so frustrated that here he had this contract made up and done. The six pages, the legal department took it, put it on one page, both sides. He put that in there to basically force that contract to be
and thank you, Jenna.
So it was kind of a power struggle.
And I'm not even sure we need a contract form section, to tell you the truth. I'd like to strike the whole section. I don't know if
well,
I would be like,
No. I think there has to be some definition to it to provide some
but
level.
It's a division model. Contract forms, I'm not saying we don't need the contract. I'm saying we need a division model section because I don't think the division should be specifying what the contract needs to look like.
Well, there's only 3 points in that section.
And I know number three is...
Number three was a great question that nobody got right.
Right.
It's the presentation I did. Thoughts, Brandon, Travis? I don't see anything in there that could not be taken out completely.
Well, that's what I think. It doesn't change the fact that a contract will be used. It just takes the division out of...
Go ahead. I think it should be common sense that your contract should be
legible.
Should be easy to read for seniors.
Are there people out there that would, without any type of regulation, take advantage of that not being on the books, thus affecting the senior or the general public?
If you're really looking at seniors, they're going to have readers, or they're not going to be able to read it and comprehend it anyway. So I think that's it.
And maybe we could leave it in and leave one, just saying that you, number one, that you do have to comply with the statute 589302, which talks about a contract, and that the amendments would meet the requirements before it's used for marketing or sale. The statutory
requirements,
but just strike that we're not going to talk about font, and we're not going to say the division has a model that needs to, that we need to approve your model.
589701. What is that?
It's the statute. It's the licensing act itself. So 589701. I've got my statute here. Would you be able to look that up for us? I'll go to this statute. Oh, and do we not have internet? Okay. This room has a internet, but we can't even get the internet to work. I'm not sure.
We don't have the
statute. But you know what? Deborah, who is not here, is our compliance officer.
Okay.
She will go through this with
some people.
If there's an issue and she can articulate, we need to leave this in or maybe change it, but we can't take it out. She'll let us know, but I
can we make a motion to
absolutely.
Strike 2 and 3? So
yeah,
the motion would be set forward to strike section or number 2 and number 3 of section R156-9-607. Do I have a motion to so strike these two sections?
R156.
I have a motion to strike R156-9-607. 2 and 3 in that section from the statute.
Thank you for that motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Brandon Birmingham seconds. All those in favor of this motion to strike 156-9-607 number 2 and 3, please indicate by saying a or nay. Herself?
Yay.
Or yay, right?
Yay or nay?
Yay.
Yay?
Yay.
Canadian. Yay from Amy?
Yay.
Yay from Travis?
And then Rebel.
Hi. I love you. Love that. And Tom here says yay and nay. Yay and a.
Okay.
As an American Canadian.
Brought a bunch of documents.
Okay. Well, let me take them back. she might be working on something else.
You mean your lunch menu or what?
But she probably grabbed citation. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Probably
It turned out the printer or snapping. Okay, now let me tell you then, I'm going to take the board's recommendation. I'm going to prepare this as striking it in the proposed rule amendment that I am going to start the process with. In the event that either that's not going to work or there's an issue, I will still proceed, and then when we have the meeting in May, we will have the document at least in that 30-day period. And if we need to make a change, we can make a change. But we'll proceed with that. Because if we wait until May to come back and say, you know, we can't do that, we are going to do that, and it takes another 3 months. So I'm going to proceed under that and make a change if necessary.
Great.
Which we can.
Wonderful. Thank you. Okay. Let's turn to the discussion on model internship. And this is presented to, this model internship was presented by the Conference, International Conference of Penal Service Examining Boards.
And I don't know if the board wants to recommend doing anything with it. I mean, they sent me a couple copies. It's available on their website. We did kind of just briefly talk about it in the last meeting. It was kind of under the impression that if the Funeral Directors Association wanted to do something with it and forwarding it out, I think Kurt, both you and my friend, you did, said, we have an internship program that we use, or we have a, you know, something that we're doing. This is a great guideline. I said we could put it on our website. We didn't feel like that'd be very helpful because that's not somewhere that the director will really look for it. So I'm just asking if there's any further instructions from the board that you would like me to do with the internship program. We do have a web link on our website for the conference. If someone were to go to the conference website, they could get any kind of material that they wanted. So,
is this something that has to be announced, talked about by the UFDA? Seems to me this is could easily be a UFDA discussion. Maybe at a next convention next year, or probably next year, not at the convention, not at the midwinter.
Yeah, because it doesn't have anything to do with licensing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just performance and getting mm-hmm. good stuff.
Trying to help people get trained better.
And I think it's a great resource, especially for, you know, I'm the intern, or also I'm the funeral director overseeing the intern.
Right.
So if the company doesn't have something like that.
Would it be helpful for me to send a PDF to the Funeral Directors Association, send it so like the president, just say this was submitted to me through the conference, the board thought we might.
So it doesn't have anything like to do with licensing, but
it is. Would you like to use it as a resource or distribute it to your members? Or
they could distribute this in a link in a monthly post.
I don't know, if it's slipped. This might be something, a lot of those students are going to be interns as well, so
okay.
That would be maybe.
Okay.
Can you set up that? So is it a PDF?
We've already got
You've got that, yeah, it's...
In a previous email she sent
so
out.
So is there also a director program?
Mm-hmm. Not the big stand. There may be, but this was something they had just worked on and said we want to just distribute this and let you know this is available.
Great.
For those...
So
you know,
booklet form?
Well, they mailed me two booklets. This is a PDF which you can print in color.
Got it.
But they did mail me a couple of booklets.
Okay. And for those funeral service establishments that don't have it very often, that don't have turnover of interns, and do it a one-off maybe every 5 or 10 years or whatever it may be, I think it's a great basis of a good training program. I really do. But I think I support what Kurt said. It's not a licensing issue.
Mm-hmm.
It really should be more of a resource for the UFDA, I would think.
Does the UFDA do training
like once a year for interns?
They don't do any
interns.
At the annual convention and at the midwinter convention, there's training, subject matter training that's provided by either national or local subject matter experts. And so this could easily be one of those topics. And the president this year is Joe Rudd, I believe.
Yeah.
And if this were sent to Joe and say, here's something for your consideration, the board suggested that maybe
this could be a training topic, discussion topic at your next convention.
Okay.
He could relay that to the board member that's over the convention next year.
I would think if I was an intern, this would be interesting to me to understand the scope of what I needed to.
Yes.
It's organized in a way that I can understand how the steps come together.
Yeah, exactly.
And for the director to
train me. It's a check. Yeah. Oh, no, didn't do that.
Can I ask, in some of this information, when I have not looked at it online, are some of these topics hotlinked? Like to the FTC.
You know, I
don't remember seeing that query. It was more just a PDF static
from one administration.
Yeah, I bet that it's not.
Military honors or Social Security or anything like that.
And they may have that information on the website, but I bet that it's not in the PDF.
Pretty certain it was a static PDF.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was that way. Okay, any other discussion on that topic? Let's move then to discussion on pre-need, and maybe this is more for whose benefit, for Jeannie and your all benefit, and help you understand. Well, let me just give a quick overview,
okay.
And I'll ask a question. Why do people choose to pre-arrange?
I did it.
Why did you choose to do it, Jeannie?
Because I was traveling internationally a lot. I knew I didn't want to leave that problem for my parents. I got a cremation thing. And said, here it is, if something happens to me, call this number of days, I'll take care of it, don't worry about it.
So for your peace of mind and for the peace of mind of your family, it's taken care of, the important decisions are made.
Yeah.
That's a key reason. If we searched a panel of 100 people, 70% or more would say that every time.
Yeah.
They don't want to leave a burden to their kids, they don't want to leave a burden to their family, so they want to make these arrangements. That's a big reason. What other reasons? What other reasons do people prearrange? Any ideas?
Yeah,
I want to
meet that woman and have that kind of power.
And I want to write
the
pulse.
Yeah, story. There you go.
It's there.
And I want to write the pulse.
I'm just wondering who wrote in Sharpie the death date.
Yeah, exactly.
Any other reading may have been on a bad day. Any other
reason? You want to be involved in your own decisions, maybe.
Okay, so you get to decide what you want. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about that,
it's
Robin,
your last
is,
word. You have the last word.
But it isn't. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about the law and pre-need is, and insurance, it can change. But as these fellows could attest, that see pre-arranged funeral plans come in, about 98% or 90% of the time, it is the final word. Once in a great while, a family can come in and change it. And there's no law that says that they can't. But people get what they want. Part of that it also is that they, because they get what they want, they pay what they want. Oftentimes, I see funeral home owners who say to their pre-need people, we want you to sell higher amounts of pre-arranged plans than our current at-need amount. And I say, well, hold on a minute. How does that work? First of all, they're coming in without a pre-arranged plan, and they're emotional, and they typically spend more than they would if they were logical and unemotional. So when we meet with them on a pre-arrangement, I say this all the time, people will spend less because they're doing it in an unemotional environment, a logical environment, just the way that Jeannie did. So
there's that assurance that the money is set aside and I don't have to worry about whether it's going to leave a huge debt for somebody else.
Yep, that's all. Yeah, that's all part of that first one, I think. And there are lots of parts to that. I don't want to leave a burden for my family, financial burden. I don't want to leave a decision burden. All of those things. Another reason that most people don't understand until we explain it to them. But with a guaranteed funeral plan, they can buy at today's prices, and they are guaranteed by virtue of the contract that they will not pay more for those services and merchandise that are guaranteed. They will not pay more in the future, regardless of future pricing increases. Okay? So people generally don't know that. Maybe 5-10% of the people, when I ask questions like this. And so we explain how that works, because a lot of times from insurance law, we're prohibited, although it happens all the time, we should never say price is fixed, the price is frozen, or the price is locked. The price of the funeral or cremation is not locked or frozen. It will increase over time with inflation. But this insurance policy that they're buying as part of the funeral plan is also designed to grow in value to keep up with the inflation on the part of the funeral home. Okay? And so insurance policies act a little different, but the guarantee part for the consumer is that, let's say that I buy a cremation for $3,000 today. When I need it, 20 years down the road, the price of the funeral home, if I went in without a plan, the price is now $6,000. The insurance plan or the trust, still a provision to do the trust, let's say it increases in value, but it only increases to $5,500. So I'll ask the question, we're $500 short from the price that needs to be paid. Who makes up that difference?
The funeral home
is obligated by virtue of the contract to either discount the funeral or to write that off as a loss. Okay? By the same token, if the insurance or trust policy grew to $6,500 and now there's $500 extra or surplus, what happens to that surplus? Again, insurance. By contract, what happens?
The family wouldn't get it.
No, the family does get it.
Oh, they do get it?
Does get it. Because by contract, you cannot, that's the excess piece. The funeral home can't keep the excess. The funeral home cannot keep excess for anything other than the services and the merchandise that they perform and provide. So if they provide services that total $6,000, then they cannot keep $500 extra. So by law and contract, that $500 should be given back to the family.
Does it show, does the
contract
show, but does it show the how it increases?
No, because the insurance is not a guaranteed rate of return.
So you don't really know.
So, but the back of the contract, back of the contract, at least in the state of Utah, thankfully, is it says any excess proceeds cannot be kept, must be sent back to the family, to the purchaser's family or something like that. It's very clear.
The funeral home can only receive what their interest is.
As their interest may appear, and interest is defined as the services and the merchandise that they provide to the family. That's what the interest that they have in.
And aren't most of the pre-needs now an insurance policy and not a trust?
Yes.
It used to be heavy on the trust in the early days, and now they're almost all insurance policies.
Yeah, I know very few that are using trust today.
Okay. And so how would you even know what your policy or what your contract had increased to?
You don't until you pass away. And by the same token, the insurance, they probably don't stay up to speed. They don't call the insurance company and say, what's my value this year? What's my value next year?
Okay.
At the time of death, if the funeral home or the establishment contacts the insurance company and says, okay, what's the death benefit? This person's passed away. They do a claim, and they get a value of that insurance policy.
And aren't they transferable? If I were to go to your establishment and buy one from a pre-need and then just said, I'd rather use this group, then you can...
They're transferable anywhere in the U.S. There's two parts to that, however. Mm-hmm. They're transferable... But they're transferable. The question is, will the funeral home establishment accept it? And that's often absolutely... The more important question is, will they also guarantee the same price? So a family moving from Utah to Chicago, they have buy a funeral plan at Larkin or Solser or somewhere, and they go to Chicago where the price of that, or Minneapolis is a better instance, where prices may be $4,000 to $5,000 more for the exact same service. The funeral home with the establishment would accept it, but they would accept it probably as cash, as money, but they wouldn't maybe guarantee the same price because they could stand to lose
$3,000 or $4,000. In most cases, you only look at the Chicago's, the Connecticut's, the New York's, but really San Francisco, where the cost is really high. Most markets, they're not only accepted but also guaranteed. And
so
the funeral
home,
they don't have to accept it, and they don't have to guarantee it. But think about that for a minute. Let's say I go to Travis and I say, Travis, I've got this policy. I've just moved here from St. Louis. And I say, will you accept it? It's a fourth lot of Great Western or whatever. Travis is going to say, oh, yeah. What would you say?
Well, I'd say most likely, yeah. Let us check it out and see what's in the plan. And
what he's going to do then is check pricing to see if the pricing in St. Louis and the increase in the policy is equivalent to what it would cost him to do it today. So you might choose to lose $300 or $400 for a family to serve that family, or you may choose to lose $1,000. That's up to the proprietor. That's up to the establishment.
Mm-hmm. You also have the family remaining as the owner, so you have to make sure they've not taken a loan or that they have quit paying if they had a premium payment.
Sure, it's about a whole lot.
So some of them are sold with a premium payment?
Well, they're all sold with a premium
payment. But I thought that you pay for the plan up front in cash.
No.
You can make payments on that? Yes, you can pay for it all at once.
As it's called a single premium insurance policy.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can do a payment period of either usually 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, or 10 years. There's an insurance company that actually offers a 20-year payment plan.
Dead before you paid it off.
Amen.
And then it stays in the cell phone. The balance is assured.
Yeah.
So that's what some people will do. Say, you know what? I'm thinking I'm not going to live 10 years, so I'll take the 10-year plan with the idea if I die in year 3 through 9,
then it's
paid off all that money.
Paid off automatically.
Wow.
There's no exam?
After it's paid off after 2 years, they have to answer certain questions based on your
health. Wow.
If they're healthy, it pays immediately.
Yeah.
And they answer
but if you are healthy,
2 or 3 more questions from the insurance company. So it's not an underwriting process. It's a field underwriting. The agent.
Typically,
all of these are whole life policies, but they're not paid like a whole life over the life of the person. They're typically shorter periods, shorter terms.
So funeral homes can set their own price on any service?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Yes. And that goes back to the FDCI. I'm doing a funeral home in Arizona right now, so it pertains, but it doesn't. This guy has low cremation rate, and if he increases price $100 from 1 year to the next, so let's say he sells $1,000 preneed. My salesperson sells $1,000 preneed. Next year, he increases his price $100. That policy better have 10% growth to cover that price increase.
Right.
Well, are there any insurance companies out there with 10% growth? No. Typically, you're 1.5% to 2% or less. So he says, how can I sell this direct cremation at $1,100 and have to lose $80 or $90 or whatever it may be? And he's dead right. And yet, FTC. FTC says that he has to. The price on that general price list is what the preneed person has to use as a price. You can't inflate it.
That's pretty too, huh?
Yeah, it can be.
It's very complicated. Not to you, because you deal with it all the time, but it is. I mean, it's life insurance, and it's a policy, and it's.
And that really should be explained.
Mm-hmm.
The insurance part often, for a lot of agents, is not explained well. And then customers get into it, and they're paying 6 months or a year or 18 months down the road, and they didn't understand how much they were going to pay for this policy. They didn't understand the length, even though they signed paperwork saying they understood. So our training, and I'm sure others, is to make sure you've got to explain the insurance part of it. It's an important part of it.
Well, that was very helpful to me. You guys probably all knew that, and you knew more than I did about it. But that was, I didn't
been there, done
some
it.
Of those things. Well, I've got one
so
on my mother-in-law.
Do you have your meetings from your husband and me?
I mean,
wait, you're up next.
So now, why is Robin? He up after me?
Well, we got to lead by example.
Okay, I'll find that.
All right. Any other questions about preenie? That's a pretty quick overview, but it is an overview.
So let me just ask this. Do you guys, will you take on as many preenie agents as want to associate with you? You'll only...
Not necessarily, because you want to have quality people out there. If you get too many...
That just depends on your on the company.
And it really is a philosophy, so there's neither wrong, not right or wrong. However... A, they need to be associated with the funeral home. And when a funeral home or establishment associates, they're essentially saying, I trust this person to quote my prices and to represent me. Mm-hmm. So very few that I know of would say, yeah, let's just hire everybody that wants to. Mm-hmm. It's very limited typically.
But we do have a lot more pre-need agents with us using insurance more mm-hmm. than we did when we just sold trust because mm-hmm. of the trusting laws that... limits your cash.
And if you do sell one that's a trust, the money has to be held in a trust account.
Correct.
See, that's what.
And the revocation, again, revocation fee is the end of that rule. It's a little harmful for the consumer. And there are a lot of reasons. I'm sure there are pros and cons to insurance, but there also are to trust. And that's why. For the most part, most of the funeral establishments have gotten away from trust.
And you have to trust 100%. You can't pay anything out for your pre-need sales agent, so that's coming out of
the company funds.
Company funds, and so insurance has opened those doors.
Yeah, dramatically.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
And our responsibility as funeral board so is really covered by the insurance division of the state of Utah. We don't look into any of that. Right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So a preenie
person has to be licensed. We have to have two licenses, insurance license, life insurance license, and then, of course, the preenie sales license.
Yeah.
And they have to have the insurance license first. They have to be licensed first there and give us that information when they apply as preenie sales.
And they take an exam? Is there an exam for preenie?
Okay. And for license.
Yeah, that was the one that we... Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions?
Just a clarification for me. The pre-need salesperson doesn't really do anything with the funeral home unless they hold dual licenses, correct?
Yeah, they don't perform any funeral directors.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. There's anything else that, anything when the agenda's complete, is there anything else that the board would like to discuss? If not, let's end this meeting. It is now 10:50 a.m. And this meeting is adjourned. Thanks all for your participation.